There's something about the music of the Poor Rambling Boys that cuts right through the noise of the world and speaks plainly to the soul. Formed 10 years ago in the Smoky Mountains, like that was 2014, the Poor Rambling Boys are at once exactly what you would expect and not at all what you would expect from a tattooed East Tennessee bluegrass outfit. But the group takes pride in being ambassadors of their genre and has brought their music from rural bluegrass festival stages to the rock clubs of Europe, resulting in hosannas and a growing fan base. This is Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, delighted to be speaking with C.J. Lewandowski of Poor Rambling Boys. This Missouri native looks back to reveal how he and his band connect with the roots of bluegrass and are pushing the genre forward. Festivarians will find out just how the outfit rolls when it debuts on the main stage of the Telluride Bluegrass Festival Friday morning, June 21st. CJ, thanks so much for spending the time with me.
Yeah, no problem. I couldn't figure out another way to spend my afternoon here in the mountains.
I could have given you a long list, but let's go with this. So I understand the origin story of your band dates back, as I had mentioned, 10 years ago. And opens in a moonshine distillery. Could you please explain?
Yes. There's a big draw down here in the mountains, Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and some people might have been to it. It's a big tourist town, and the main attraction would be the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And through that, starting in 1934, you know, a lot of things had developed from there to attract more people that just don't hike. So there's theaters now, there's Dollywood here, there's putt-putt golf, there's anything you can think of. And so one of the things that happened, and I guess 2010, the state legislature, they passed some stuff going on to where there could be quote-unquote legal moonshine, unaged, you know, whiskey. And so when that came through, there were several that kind of jumped on that and created business from it. And so you can come down here to the mountains and taste moonshine and all that. Well, long story short, there's one distillery down here called Old Smoky Moonshine. It's actually the first ever quote-unquote moonshine distillery. And you can go in there and taste samples. And they decided to incorporate music, mountain music, and turn bluegrass music into their distillery in downtown Gatlinburg. So it started there, and there were several house bands at the time, and I was filling in. I had moved down here to work for the city of Gatlinburg and filling in, and eventually landed a spot to where I could manage a band because they were opening up another location. So when they opened that location, they asked me to bring the fifth band, and I said, but if we're going to do this, I would rather play music with some friends that I know for a long time, and they kind of want to play music for a living. And instead of us traveling all over the country, which most of us were doing at the time with other people, the people from all over the country came to us at this distillery. So we started down there in 2014, right there on the stage, and it was a experience. You know, we got the play music for a living. We made a check every week and got to go home and sleep in our own beds every night. It was a little different pace, but it was a lot of fun starting out that way.
Okay, thank you. Then just 3 years later, you had a record label with your freshman release, Back to the Mountains, and started touring in Canada and Europe. How did that all come about?
That happened by way of the other bands that we had played in previously. Josh Wrinkle and Jeremy Brown were playing with Tommy Brown and the County Line Grass, and myself, I was with the Carl Shiflett and Big Country Show out of Texas. And with Carl, I had developed a lot of, you know, relationships with people, went to Europe several times. A lot of people liked Carl's honky-tonk style of bluegrass. So when we started at Old Smoky, a lot of folks were taking videos of us, and it kind of got over social media pretty quickly. I remember gaining like 13,000 followers on Rambling Boys page just in the matter of like 4 months just by playing at Old Smoky. So So that exposure via social media, it showed some of my friends that I had made previously what we were doing. So a lot of people started asking, would the Poor Rambling Boys or they couldn't. I said, well, we have a day job. So if you can cover our expenses on this date, then yeah, we'll gladly come up there. But we never had any intention to tour at all. We were just strictly a house band. So in August of 2015, we went to Shady Grove Bluegrass Festival in Alberta, came back to Tennessee, played Tennessee 3 or 4 days at the distillery, and then went straight to Europe and did a 2-week tour over there. And that was actually the first traveling or touring that we ever did. Nobody in the States had wanted us yet.
Okay.
I say that lighthearted.
So in 2019, you were signed to the legendary Roots label Rounder, who just released your third album, Toil, Tears, and Trouble, to pretty much rave reviews. So talk about how Rounder found your group and how Poor Rambling Boy's success almost right out of the gate felt to you. After all, you went from this brewery gig in the Smoky Mountains to world tours in what seems like a heartbeat. In 2022, you were nominated, your group was nominated for several IMBA awards as well. So talk about that Rounder Records 2019 and what happened after.
Yeah, that was a large step for us. The founders, Ken, Marion, and Bill, they were all at IBMA 1 year, and I believe it was the year we were nominated. We were a showcase band for IBMA, and they watched all our shows. I remember the first show seeing Ken right there watching, that nervous as can be. And after that week, it just kind of whirlwind. We got a major manager. We got the major label. There was about, I think we had 4 offers with labels after that week. And Rounder stood out amongst all of those. And we worked a deal with her, and it just kind of I couldn't believe it. I always remember seeing those the rinds of the Rounder Records. They were all the same, you know, on these CDs back when I was a kid. So when you saw that sticking out at the music store, you knew it was going to be quality, good bluegrass or folk music. So I would always aim for the Rounder stuff, never thinking that we might have a chance to be on Rounder Records. And that Toil, Tears, and Trouble project was a really cool collaboration with us, and mainly Ken Irwin, who was the artist relations person and still is contributing a lot to the genre. But he approached with a lot of songs, and we went from there, and we got a lot of hype out of that, and a Grammy nomination came from that, which I never, you know, thinking we'd never be on Rounder Records. And then all of a sudden we have a Grammy nomination to tote along beside that. That was incredible. So Rounder really helped us with a lot of dreams coming true.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Now, could you talk about some of your musical influences? Some of whom I imagine will be performing at Bluegrass this year, like Bella Fleck, Billy Strings, Molly Tuttle. And Sierra Hull, I think, is not on the schedule, but she played Telluride often. I first interviewed her at age 14 when she was part of Nickel Creek with Chris Steele, who will also be there. So could you just chat about some of those musical influences?
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I'm super excited. We've never been to Telluride, and been to Colorado many times, and it's going to be a great experience. This is one of those things that you check off the bucket list, and there's to be on stage with those folks. You know, it's kind of like a Merle Fest of sorts. We see, I guess it's the Merle Fest of the West for us from the East. You know, Merle Fest brings in so many incredible talents, and that's what's happening always at Tide. So to be on that list is amazing. And you know, Billy, I called Billy Strings just the other day, and this is kind of classified information, but I'll let it out to you guys that Billy and I just we cut a song not too long ago. I've been working on a project with posthumously now, Bobby Osborne. And that's one of my greatest influences, Bobby Osborne, mm-hmm. who passed away. I believe it'll be right at a year when we're at Telluride that mm-hmm. Bobby passed away. Mm-hmm. And I decided to continue this album that we had been in the process of making. And I actually called the other day and asked him if he would want to cut something on the album with me and Bobby. And he obliged and thought it was an incredible idea. And we actually I'm mixing that stuff right now. And it should be out right around the time we're out there at Telluride. So it's cool to have those heroes, but it's also to have those, it's amazing to have those people as friends and mm-hmm. to be able to call and chat up stuff. I've had, you know, Rob McCurry in the studio. Dell was in there mm-hmm. with me the other day. Sam yeah. Bush is going to come in and hang out with us. So it's just, you know, it's friendships, it's mentors, but it's also, we're all on a nice level playing field as far as what we like to do and how we like to do things. And it's just fun to have friends. And then you can travel all over the country and every week you see your friends just in different locations.
Good. And you get paid for it too. So,
yeah, all right.
So how do you define bluegrass music? And in that context, how do you describe Poor Rambling Boy's place and sound in that lineage?
I think my, you know, a lot of people call us more of a traditional West band, and I try to stay away from the word traditional because, you know, what we call traditional now was at one time extremely progressive. Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys, when they hit the Grand Ole Opry in especially with Earl Scruggs on the banjo in 1946, was extremely positive. So I try and lean away from the traditional bluegrass word, but I think we play authentic music, and bluegrass to me is a wide swath of acoustic music that is real. You know, I think all bluegrass music is real. And so it's a short, and it can be whatever you want it to be. And I think that's the beauty of it. It does have some parameters, I would say, but those parameters I think are defined by the person and the group that you play with. Like, what do you want to accomplish acoustically and musically? I think the parameters that I would say is, you know, it's got that high lonesome sound to it. It's, you know, subject matters that are relatable and, you know, very, very easily digestible to the audience member. And you've got your different tempos. But a lot of this, to me, as a kid, I was exposed to the rhythm. Like in Missouri, I remember, I've told this story a lot here lately, a guy named Jim Orchard who taught me how to play. Mm-hmm. I was in his band called the Ozark Bluegrass Boys when I was in high school. And he would not allow me to take a mandolin break for about a year that I was in the band because he wanted me to concentrate on the rhythm of bluegrass music. And that, mm-hmm. I hated it. I hated it at the time. I was so mad because I wanted to play breaks, you know, but that really made me appreciate rhythm. And I've gotten older I've kind of pushed people to that rhythmic pattern of stuff too, in the timing of things. And it's kind of cool to look back and what you once hated, how somebody taught you how to do something. You say, oh, wait, I wouldn't have it any other way. I respect it. So back to the definition, I feel like it's a lot of rhythmic patterns and stuff that touches your soul. You know, the rhythm of it, whether you can play flashy or fancy or sing flashy mm-hmm. or fancy, that rhythmic probably really touches people, I feel like. And that's why we've got people out there dancing and having a good time. And I think it, there's a broad spectrum to the definition of bluegrass, and I think that's part of the reason why I like it so much.
Good. Gives you plenty of latitude.
Right?
Yeah. So I know that you're upcoming release, Wanderers Like Me, drops August 16th.
Yes.
Will you be focusing on the riffs from Wanderers Like Me? Actually boiling this question down to the meta, which is what can Festivarians expect from Poor Rambling Boys set in maybe in addition to tracks from Wanderers Like Me?
Oh, we've got, you know, we throw back to the earlier albums. We also like to honor our heroes. You know, there's a lot of things that we've done that honor the people that taught us how to play and the people that we've listened to our whole lives. You know, we like to throw a Stamp song in there too. We like to throw an Osborne Brothers song in there, but we also like to play our music that we've developed over the decade. But I think it's hopefully people will enjoy our ups and downs of the show. We like to come out there hot and maybe pull back a little bit and then hit it hard again. And Jake Matters, like I said earlier, is everything. We want it to flow good, but we want to touch several different emotions. We want to touch several different timings and feelings to where everybody gets a little bit of something. We try and throw, even though we come out there in rhymes and cowboy hats and stuff, we try and throw a little bit of new and old on you, not just old stuff that might be a little mossy. We try and keep it fresh, I guess you could say.
Thank you. This has been Susan DeBrock, Telluride Inside and Out, speaking with founder, I guess, of the Poor Rambling Boys, CJ Lewandowski. And we look forward to seeing the group on Friday morning, June 21st. Thank you again for your time, CJ.
Hey, thank you very much, and we're looking forward to coming to Colorado and being on the Telluride.
Amen to that.